morning, everybody. Bruchim haba'im. Blessed are you who are gathered here. So whether you are a student, a parent, a grandparent, or a sibling, whether your family has been going to college graduations for generations, or if this is the very first one in your family, it's a special time for all of you, a transition. And here's the thing about these big times. They're joyful and they're scary. We sense they are sacred. They are what the Celts might have called thin times, when the membrane between this reality and the next somehow seems more permeable. We are here with these people in this moment, and we're also somewhere else in the past, with people who might not even be alive today. We're flooded with emotions, time collapses. When I look out at all of you, I think of graduations I have known when I was sitting in your seats. There was my own graduation from a small liberal arts college, not unlike Lafayette, almost 40 years ago. I don't remember if there was a baccalaureate service. This is what I remember. My mother wanted me to return my robe right away because we had reservations for dinner, but I wanted to talk to my friends. And we got into this whole mother-daughter thing, more intense because of the situation. And we were both so happy and overwhelmed in this large moment, and we were still trying to figure out who was in charge of what. My most recent memory comes from yesterday in New York City. I was the mom in the story, and my oldest daughter graduated law school. She's an adult, but she's still my child. And I wanted so much for everything to go perfectly on that big day. And we love each other just as much as my mom and I did. And my mom's been gone for 5 years now. But just for that reason, these things can be fraught. So I understand, here you are with so much going on inside of all of you. And here's this rabbi up here who's going to talk about what? Holy chutzpah? So let me tell you. Holy chutzpah, some people, Abraham Joshua Heschel called it spiritual audacity. Someone else might call it moral courage. But whatever name you give it, it comes in many flavors and can mean many different things. Today I'm going to tell you three stories that speak to me about what it might mean. They're stories about people I have never met personally. But after reading these stories, I felt elevated, like I was somehow a better person for them having shared this planet with me. You may relate to one of these stories or another, or you may not relate to any of them, but hang in there, because remember, I've been in your seat, and I'm going to be short. The first story is about a man named Daniel Hernandez, a 20-year-old University of Arizona student, a Mexican-American active in the gay community. Daniel wanted to prepare for a career in public service, so last fall he signed up for an internship with Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. He began work on a Monday. That Saturday morning, he drove to a shopping center where the Congresswoman was meeting with constituents. Shortly after he arrived, standing at the edge of the crowd, he heard gunfire. A deranged gunman had opened fire, and he couldn't tell what was happening except that people were screaming and falling. In the end, as all of you know, 19 people were shot and 6 died. Daniel ran toward the bullets. With a few sessions of EMT training, emergency medical training, under his belt, he thought maybe he could help. He began to stop at fallen victims and hold their wrists and check for a pulse. But suddenly he noticed the Congresswoman was down. He rushed toward her. He observed the entrance wound, and he held her in his lap, and he talked to her. He said, "Squeeze my hand if you can hear me." And she squeezed it. He started to staunch her flow of blood with his hands, but then he remembered about infection, and he asked someone nearby if they had something cleaner. Finally, medics arrived and rushed Giffords to the hospital, President Barack Obama is among those who have hailed Daniel as a national hero, saying he probably saved Gabrielle Giffords' life. But Hernandez says he's not a hero. He just did what he had to do. Story number two. Early in the invasion of Afghanistan, American forces captured 20-year-old John Walker Lind. You may remember the American Taliban. He was a citizen from California who had indeed fought with the Taliban. As the Justice Department attorneys prepared to interrogate Lind, they consulted the ethics office to find out what is the ethics of how they were going to go about interrogating him. Not torture, he could have a lawyer, that kind of thing. A young lawyer named Jessalyn Radak was part of the Bush Justice Department team, and she was assigned to write back. Now, Jessalyn Radak had lost friends in the World Trade Center, and she was furious with Lind for allying himself with the regime that could do such a terrible thing. But Radak tenaciously advised the prosecutors in email after email that Lind could not be lawfully interrogated without access to a lawyer. She believed in the law. Radek's advice was ignored. When the case went to trial, Radek was shocked to discover that the document the Justice Department provided the courts as to how they were advised was strangely incomplete. The most inconvenient emails she had written showing the government's missteps were simply missing. At this point, it would have been easy to let matters lie. She had little sympathy for Lind, and she was learning, perhaps, that sometimes the ethical just doesn't carry the day. But Jessalyn could not move on. Instead, she looked for those old emails on her computer. They were gone. She called tech support, and with their help, she resurrected them. She forwarded them to her supervisor with a cover memo, and she kept a copy for herself in case of future disappearances. A month later, Jessalyn left her job at the Justice Department, not by her choice. She had hoped to make a career in government service, but that plan was over. From the private sector, she watched the story unfold in the news, knowing her truth and knowing that the government was not revealing it. She had every reason now to leave well enough alone. She now had another job, but she did not. She contacted Newsweek magazine and provided the evidence that showed them that the government story was untrue. At that point, her current employer was informed by the people at Justice that there were going to be some ethics problems with her, unspecified, and that the Bar Association was going to have to be involved. She lost another job. But Jessalyn Radak was not surprised. And she did not regret her choice. Today, she is a leading voice in the legal world of whistleblowing and recently published her story in a book. Is she a heroine? She said in an interview that being silent each time was just never an option. The prospect left her with, she said, dyspepsia of the soul. My third and final story. Rabbi Sarah Basson grew up in Kansas, raised by a mother who was Roman Catholic originally and a dad who was a Reformed Jew. Her extended family was an interfaith mix, and she says, I called her and interviewed her, that she learned much of her social justice imperative from the Catholic side of her family. She attended Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania, and was powerfully influenced by her time here, especially her time in Hillel and its open-door policy. Less than 10 years ago, Sarah was sitting where you are today. After a few years working in Catholic-Jewish relations, Sarah entered the rabbinical program at Hebrew Union College, the first year of which is spent in Israel. Now, in 2004, few rabbinical students ventured outside of Israel proper. It was considered unsafe. But Sarah heard about a brand new program called Encounter, which would bring Jews who chose to join it to the West Bank, to occupied Palestinian territory to spend a few nights living in the home of Palestinians and hearing their stories. Sarah became an active participant in Encounter, and before the year was over, she had become a facilitator. Back in Los Angeles at the Hebrew Union College, during her third year of rabbinical school, Sarah heard about an opportunity to travel with a group of people who were already rabbis to Iran for 2 weeks. Now, if you're thinking, do a lot of rabbis go to Iran? No, the answer is no, very, very few. In fact, this was an unusual delegation of rabbis, part of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. The trip took place during the semester, and she consulted her professors, none of whom thought it was a especially good idea to go to Iran. Remember, Ahmadinejad, to most American Jews, is the present-day pharaoh. But she was interested. She wanted to see for herself. She went. And 1 year ago, she was ordained, offered a very good job in Jewish communal work, paid for by Jewish philanthropy. But instead, she went to work for a tiny nonprofit, not so tiny since she's been there, founded just a few years ago to improve Muslim-Jewish relations. Now she has to daily explain to people why this matters, to challenge them in some of their core fears and beliefs and stereotypes. And she has to raise her own salary, which was not a factor her parents loved, but she said, I asked her, do you think you're special, especially courageous? She said, I think I'm curious, and I follow my curiosity and my passion. So, stories are over. Your story is going to be your own. You may never have an occasion to rush into gunfire, and you may never actually make a big decision or have to make a big decision that involves keeping your values or keeping your job. Maybe you'll never discover a calling for an activity that will take you outside the mainstream of your own community. But then again, perhaps you will, and you'll be surprised. So someday you'll look back and you'll say, so in 2012, I graduated from Lafayette College, and I sat there wondering, am I ever going to have an opportunity to show holy chutzpah? But then, it's your story, and it begins now. And notice in these stories, it wasn't one big thing. It's the small steps. First, Hernandez took an EMT course and then signed up for an internship. And Radak shows what job she took and then how she chose to follow it and then what she chose to do after she left it. And Bassin explored how the world looked from some other perspectives, and the rest was history. Sometimes it is the little first steps that actually take courage. So let me close by returning to my opening remarks about family. Sometimes families take some courage too. And maybe this weekend, you could each take an opportunity to summon a little bit of that inner chutzpah, that inner daring, and say something you might not otherwise have the nerve to say. Like a student might say to a parent, you know, this is an exciting and somewhat awesome time for me, so if I'm acting like a jerk, I hope you'll forgive me. I know I'm lucky to have you as a mom and dad, and it's a great day. And maybe if you're a parent, you might say the same thing very similar. You know, this is a little bit hard for me too. And I might not always say exactly the right thing, but just always know that I love you. May God bless you all. And may you all flourish in a world at peace.